because we've done it, and you listen to Sixth Sense Podcast.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the first episode of the Sixth Sense Podcast for the 2013-2014 Ottawa Senators season. My name is Graham Nichols. I'm joined in studio by the man, Grant Creech. Creech, what's going on?
Hockey's back, buddy. Pumped to be here. Even though it's a sauna in here.
It is.
Literally.
It's a little warm.
Pumped to be here. Fired up to record. Not too often we get to record on a game day before a game. So go for some pops after.
Straight from the studios, straight to the bar. Yeah, should be a good night. First things first, Ottawa's record, 1-0-1. They beat Buffalo 1-0 in an exceptionally well-played game by Craig Anderson. Bailed the Senators out of a few defensive miscues in their own end. Thoughts on his first game, and if you even want to extend that conversation to their loss in a shootout to Toronto, go for it.
Obviously, great first game. I thought it was, as a fan, I thought it was a great game to watch, even though it was only 1-0. Obviously, there was tons of defensive breakdowns on both sides, so the coaches wouldn't be too happy with that one, but I loved it. There was chances all game long. I had fun. Goal was gorgeous. I was pumped right away. Like, Carlson doing that backhand sauce to Weirkosh on that first power play, and then he crushes it off both posts. I was pumped right from there. I was ready to go.
So, I'm shocked. Shocked that you'd be...
Oh, that was a bomb.
Absolutely jacked up about that. I'm looking forward to... By the way, I'm looking forward to seeing Weirkosh on that first unit all season. The second line, honestly, through the first two games has been absolutely exceptional. It's everything that you could have hoped for. MacArthur, his transition into the lineup has been seamless. The fact that he's been so public with his disdain for Randy Carlyle is incredible. But he's fit right in. The play that he made on the game-winning goal to Carlson, where he gained the line, stopped, took the time, realized he wasn't being pressured, and found the late man trailer. Beautiful goal. Cross-ice feed. Tape to tape. Not much more you can ask for.
Oh, just watching him in preseason, I think I'm really going to like this player. And he's answered any questions I've had about him so far. I now know what he brings other than being a sense killer, and he's going to chip in with some goals. He's formed some chemistry with Kyle Turris and Corey Konecker. Obviously, that's been their best line through two games. And I guess you could say he's formed some chemistry with Bobby Ryan and their hatred for Randy Carlyle. They can bond over that.
Bobby Ryan's been a little less public with it, though. Everything that he said has been pretty nice. He hasn't shat on Randy Carlyle yet.
No.
He's been very classy in what he said. However, he has struggled a little bit in the first two games, and we've seen it through the media being conveyed that the public, the paying fan, or the fans, for that matter, they don't have to be paying, have been displeased with Ryan's play. We're two games into the season. They play tonight, obviously, against LA. Ryan's play has been lackluster. You know, he's a goal scorer who hasn't been scoring goals, so... What does everybody do when a goal scorer isn't scoring goals? They criticize. However, I haven't seen that much criticism towards him, or panic for that matter. I feel like it's been a little bit of a media construction. A
couple comments on talk radio.
But I mean, for a guy who's coming in with a lot of bluster and that kind of like brouhaha, this guy's going to be an elite goal scorer for the Senators now that he's playing with Jason Spezza. I think the expectations are, for the fan base, quite high. Justifiably so. They gave up a premium price to get him, bring him in. But it's way too early to be overly analytical.
We talked about it on the way in. There's just nothing to talk about because they had no games to start the season. They had two, and now there's another 4-day wait for another game.
So here's a question for you then. Had you watched a lot of Bobby Ryan before he came in Ottawa?
I wouldn't say a lot. Like, I'd sit down and watch a full Anaheim game, but I've always had the center ice package, so, and I've always gone to bed later at night, like 2 or 3 in the morning. So I'd be watching the late games anyways.
Okay.
So I've seen him, followed him a little bit. I used to follow the OHL kind of closely, like not like I'm a junior hockey expert, but I definitely had seen Bobby Ryan, and I knew what he was. I always kind of, maybe I thought he was a little bit quicker than he is, but I knew that he was a goal scorer with very soft hands and a great shot, and I don't think that's going to change.
And we've seen flashes of that. Even in the preseason, he had that rocket goal against, I can't even remember which team it was against.
Winnipeg, I think.
Winnipeg, yeah, you're right. Correct. But yeah, I understand what you're saying about his skating style. I think I hadn't seen him that often coming from Anaheim, so it was a bit sobering to see him play, and you're like, okay, this is what he is. I understand what he is. And it's exactly what you said. Big body, throws his weight around, has flashes. Not a terrible skater by any measure, but no. At the same time, it's not. I don't think he's that dynamic, game-breaking talent that you're kind of hoping he would be. But there's still time for that to happen as well. Like, we haven't really seen him gel on the first line yet.
Well, part of it, I think, for me was, like, you see the highlights. Like, his highlight reel goals are unbelievable. And they're all kind of, like, end-to-end, undressing the defenseman and undressing the goalie. So I guess that put in my head, okay, he's probably a good skater if he can create chances like that, but he just has silky smooth hands and he knows how to put the puck in the net. So I guess.
But he is what he is.
Yeah, he is what he is. Danny Heatley was.
It'd be like the Blue Jays holding R.A. Dickey up to the same standard that, oh shit, we just traded for a knuckleballer. Why doesn't he throw 95? You know, so long as he gets that end result, who really gives a shit how he gets them, right? But I think the biggest concern might be down the road. Is this guy who's just essentially a goal scorer, power forward hybrid, who doesn't skate particularly amazing, is that a guy you build a team around? But I think what we're seeing now, and even with Spezza's groin right now, people are having this conversation earlier, I think, than they would be otherwise. We're having this conversation that we're sitting back and Spezza's not playing tonight because he has a sore groin. Groin. In quotation marks. We're having the conversation now. Are these two guys that you build a team around? Spets is always injured, seemingly, these years. And we're not really sure what we have in Bobby Ryan yet.
Yeah, too early to say. Plus, there's the sense of so many pieces, so many options. There's two contracts expiring in 2 years. So they got to figure out what they want. I don't know. Do you trade your newly named captain? Or do you build around a guy that's getting older, and who's not gonna, even if he goes into like a second line center role with age, he's not that two-way forward or grinding type center that you'd like in that number two spot normally, although I guess Kyle Turris isn't that right now either, but
but that's a standard that we hold these guys to. Like, for years we heard the same complaint about Jason Spezza. He doesn't play enough of a two-way game.
Oh, I have no complaints with his game.
For years leading up to it was the same thing. Like, you get these players who play on your first line, you play big minutes, and if they're not the best two-way players in the league, people freak out. It's like they focus on what they aren't instead of what they are, and now we're at that conversation where we're saying, oh, shit, do we want to build with these guys moving forward? And I'm not saying there's a right or a wrong answer here. I don't think we have enough of a body of work in two games of the season to make any kind of assessments right now.
Too early to answer on Bobby Ryan. And I think that chemistry will come. Like, once Spez gets healthy, I think probably the main thing is for Bobby Ryan just to play his game instead of trying to cater to Spez's game. Like, Spez, he's one of the most creative passers in the league. He's going to be able to find Bobby Ryan whatever he's doing on the
ice. And vice versa. I think there's that whole playmaking aspect of Ryan's game that we haven't really seen that much of either.
Yeah, that's fair.
But two guys who need the rock on their stick to be effective. And to this point, it hasn't. They've generated a number of shots.
Oh, they had a few chances in Buffalo. Look at that. The chance that Ryan set up for Spezza. Miller made that unreal save. Like, they've had their chances. I'm not worried. Hopefully this groin thing doesn't last too much longer, but other than that, I'm
fine. Are you saying that Bobby Ryan can't develop chemistry with Stefan DaCosta, our de facto number one center right now?
It would be nice if he would.
You know what? I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing what DaCosta could do. Because to this point, we had heard all throughout camp that, hey, him as well as Jean-Gabriel Pageau were the reasons why Mika Zibanejad was returned to Binghamton. Those guys won the job outright. And it afforded the Senators the opportunity to develop Mika Zibanejad as a center, playing big minutes down in Binghamton. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do playing with Bobby Ryan and McCulloch. I know that's a trio that was used in, what, the exhibition game in Barrie? Did they play in Barrie on the first line? I feel like they did.
No, it was in Ottawa.
It was in the Ottawa game?
Against, okay. Obviously, both were against Iowa.
So they've had a number of reps. They've had some games together.
That was an ugly game.
This is kind of a do-or-die moment for DaCosta in his career. I don't know how big the window of opportunity is going to be for him at this level. I know he sat the last game in Toronto to get Matt Cassian into the lineup, but I feel like his time's running out. And at what point do the Senators cut bait with DaCosta?
I guess that all depends on injuries, but hopefully he plays well with these guys, and I guess best case they can flip him, because if he's going to succeed, he's probably going to have to be a top six forward. Like he can't play the wing, whereas Zibanejad or someone else can play the wing if someone were to go down by injury. Like, this guy's playing center,
and he was playing on the top line in preseason for a few games.
Yeah.
So here's the theory, like. I was talking to a few people on social media, Twitter, this afternoon, and one of the theories was, here's DaCosta, makes a team. Was he kept around as an insurance package, so to say, because Spetz's injury was being downplayed throughout camp?
Could be. He did have a good camp, too, though. He was. I liked what he did in his games.
Did you think that he outplayed Zibanejad?
I'd say so. I'd say I was completely shocked by that move, and I would rather have Mika up on the club right now, but I think Stefan DaCosta played better than him in training camp.
Yeah, it's tough, because I look at Zibanejad's season. He started off okay last season. He was just an injury call up at this point, right? Like, he wasn't particularly playing well down in Binghamton at the time, and he got called up and he started playing well, started gaining some confidence. You can see his game develop over the course of the season. I think he played 48 games, and then I thought he played great in the playoffs. He was one of the better forwards.
Yeah, for sure.
And he was starting to use his speed and his size to create opportunities. And I would have assumed, and I'm not dismissing whatever DaCosta and Pageau did in their respective camps, but I thought maybe Zibanejad's a guy who offers different elements than those players in terms of a side speed combination.
100%.
And I thought maybe the organization might give him a break because of the sample size of games that he had last year. Not that he should be, you know, taking anything for granted and not trying to earn his spot on the roster, but I thought what he did in 48 games plus, or 42 games plus the playoffs last year, was more than enough to, you know, justify carrying over a guy like DaCosta, who I don't think will return much in a trade.
No. I agree, and he's not going to play in the bottom six for you. You could put Mika Zibanejad anywhere in the lineup. I think he's more effective. But it would be nice if they can get him some reps and flip him for something, because I don't see him staying a while, especially if they're opting to healthy scratch him in Toronto to have Cassian in it. If they're going to play in that division, and if their mindset's going to be that they want the heavyweight in their lineup, he's going to see a lot of games against Montreal, Toronto, Buffalo. Well, maybe not Buffalo, but
right.
Everyone else, he's going to see games. So is Stefan DaCosta going to be up here and be a healthy scratch for half the season?
Yeah, that's not doing him any favors. It's not doing anyone on the organization any favors. Mind you, at the same time, you know what? Sending Zibanejad down to get the reps, if the intent and the organization, to their credit, has been consistent with the message that they want to develop him as a center, playing him the 20 to the 25 minutes a night down in Binghamton with their best skill players and giving him time on the specialty teams, that's not going to hurt him. And if that's the intent, to develop him as a center, you can defend that. I don't have a huge problem with that, but I still think I'd rather have him on the parent roster than a guy like DaCosta.
Yeah, I agree.
Carlson's Achilles, we haven't talked about that yet. How far along do you think he is based off what you've seen so far? Are you comfortable with what you've seen thus far?
Tonight will be interesting, going against Drew Doughty. I think that'll probably push him to want to have a strong offensive game. Plus the Kings, like, they just swallow offense, so he's going to look to create. But what I haven't seen yet, and I'm not shitting on his game, I've liked a lot of what he's seen, like, other than the turnovers and whatever, but you can tell his confidence is back and everything, and his stride is back, but you don't see him, like, pull away from players as he used to. And like, he used to take the puck out of anywhere in the corner in his defensive zone, and he'd skate it out every time. And I haven't really seen that yet. Am I concerned? No, I think it'll improve. So,
well, obviously it's progressing, right?
Because
last year in the playoffs,
oh, you could tell.
Yeah.
When was he come back against Washington or something? I think he had 2-point night or something. You could just tell, though, his skating wasn't there. And it's back, but I'm not 100% confident that it's 100%. but I'm not concerned with it. He'll be fine.
But even Kevin Bieksa said when he had the same injury, it takes you at least a year to get back to the level where you're at. We're not even close to that right now.
Yeah.
So to see him at this level right now, assuming he can get to that point, I'm completely, completely comfortable. But if he can't get back to that point, God, robs us of one of the most entertaining players that we've ever seen.
Dominant last year.
Oh, should be a good show this afternoon. We have TSN, Sean Simpson, Simmer.
I like it.
Coming on the show. He's been very vocal about Bobby Ryan. So I'm looking forward to talking to him, kind of delving into that just a little bit. Even delving into the whole Zibanejad Jet thing, the Jason Spezza thing. Just to even from like being in the front office, just like how they construct teams, how they want to build it, getting that balance between the youth and the vets. That's what I'm looking forward to seeing. Because I think Ottawa's at that stage where they're going to have to start adding pieces here and there. They have the youth, but determining when to buy, when to sell, you know, that whole like constant juggle. It'd be interesting to get his take on what he would do or what his next few moves might be for the Ottawa Senators. So I'm looking forward to that. Anything you want to hit on before we jump to anything else?
No, I think lots of the questions or points that I want to hit on, I'd like to get Simmer's take. So might as well save some of that for him.
I know you wanted to talk about Thomas Hurdle. I know you wanted to talk about Laviolette.
I'll ask him about that. I'll see what his opinion is on that.
Brad Stewart suspension as well.
Yeah, I got a take on that, and let's see Simmer's take too.
And Sergei Fedorov's unretired.
That's strange.
It's amazing. So, did you want to call Simmer now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Perfect. When we get back, we'll be talking to Sean Simpson from TSN 1200. So this is slightly embarrassing. We cannot get a hold of Sean Simpson. I'm assuming he is being affected by this Rogers outage. I couldn't imagine a Bell Media employee is on Rogers, but no, this is the situation that we're facing.
Maybe he couldn't get out of that contract. Maybe he was tweeting from Eric Carlson's account.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah, so unfortunately, it doesn't seem like Simmer is going to be joining us on the program tonight. So with that being said, why don't we hit on a number of the issues that we were going to talk about with Simmer, actually. So first things first, let's start off with Thomas Hurdle and his emergence as the league's number one scorer.
Crazy.
Why did we draft CeCe? This guy's amazing.
Hey, you hear Richardson's comments after their game? He said if he keeps playing like this, he's not going to be here for long.
I did hear that, which is good because I don't know how much longer people can take of
Corvo-Griba combo.
Joe Corvo and Eric Griba as the number six guy with Chris Phillips. I'm sure Chris Phillips is in the same boat. He's like, guys, it's a contract year. You're killing me out here.
You see that CC goal?
Yeah, you know. Yeah,
oh, wow.
It was unbelievable.
Unreal.
Nice play.
Yeah, Hurdle though.
Terrible slide by the defender. Yeah. Just to go right past.
CC saw that coming from the neutral zone. He's just like, okay, you're sliding. Let's
gauge your momentum.
It's like
dude.
A slip and slide right there.
Oh my god.
Oh man. Posting in.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice to see the goalie lose his angle as well. It's just like such a breakdown. But yeah, no, heads up play on his part, obviously.
Oh, it was
great shot.
Yeah.
Took the opportunity and buried it. What more can you ask for? He's played well, apparently. So if he ends up being a midseason call-up, that has to be good. As long as he's on that development curve that sees him.
I don't know who, but someone must have went on record, I think, in preseason saying that he'll see games this year. Like, he'll see games.
Well, I'm assuming he's surpassed Mark Borowiecki on the depth chart.
Yeah.
I mean,
if one of their puck-moving defensemen...
Assuming Graba goes down, then I'm imagining Borowiecki would replace him because he brings the same intangibles that Graba does, same skill set, easy to interchange.
Which I have a question for you. Maybe you'd prefer Corvo in the lineup than Graba, but if the Sens are going to... If they want the toughness against the teams like Toronto, if they want that element in the lineup, why not dress Graba and keep DeCosta in the lineup and not dress Cassian.
And use DeCosta on the power play? That's what you're saying? Conversely, and I forget which blogger it was, brought up the same point about their PK situation. When Corvo plays, Carlson all of a sudden goes into a PK role, which he's not exactly. You know, obviously he can skate, moves around well, but I mean, you don't want him in front of the net trying to clear out space so the goaltender can see.
Yeah.
Again, it goes back to Carlson's Norris Trophy season. Like, when he was excelling, they weren't using him on the PK. They'd rather play more even strength minutes, let him do his thing and dominate the puck possession at that level, and then allocate the minutes accordingly. And Greiba is a big dude who can clear the front of the net. We had Kurt Kleinendorst on the podcast, what, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? And he said the same thing. You're going to love this guy. He's a big hulking guy who just, you know, it's the old school mentality. Cross check to the back. Dr. Lumber.
Man's man. He's got the beard. He loves hunting.
Yeah. I'm not a huge Greiba mark by any measure. But, I mean, if his best skill set is a guy on the PK who can clear the front of the net, take advantage of it. But, yeah, DeCosta could be a second-line power play guy. He's been put in that role before. So I wouldn't be opposed to having him in. Mind you, I'm not a Cassian fan either. No. So
that's why, going back to last year, like I understood what the organization's going through, and I understand that they want that element in there, but I think he's just going to end up seeing too many games, especially games that he shouldn't be in the lineup. I guess tonight is a game that if Spezza had stayed, and from what it looked like, Cassian was going to be in the lineup if Spezza was playing and DeCosta was the odd man out. And to me, like, the Kings, they don't need that. They don't need that against the Kings, so whatever. It is what it is. They feel they need that.
I'm looking forward to seeing what DeCosta can do playing against the Kings' top six. Like, are Kopitar and Richards going to eat those guys up?
Just the Kings' system. Like you saw, I felt last year in the playoffs, I thought St. Louis was a better team. I thought they deserved to win that series other than goaltending, and not even, like, Brian Elliott didn't even.
Oh, same with the Sharks. Like,
same with the Sharks.
And Detroit and Chicago. Like, those are five exceptionally good teams.
And they just
could kick your ass on any night.
Shut down.
Yeah.
And when you do get a chance, you got Jonathan Quick back there making an unreal save. Back to fighting. You want to touch on fighting?
To me, I don't know. Like, I look at Matt Cassian, and is that guy a deterrent? No. If a fighter is a good deterrent, in my mind, that guy's barely fighting because he wins too much. He's too big. He's too strong. It's like George LaRocque in his heyday. Nobody would fight that guy because he was so much better than everyone else. And, like, if Matt Cassian is a deterrent, he's winning more fights than he's losing. But, I mean, if Matt Cassian's just there to get his face, just to fight, just to be, like, that momentum changer that coaches like to use. I think, like, coaches more often than not throw these guys out there as, like, a last act of, like, desperation. Just to kind of, like, if their team's not going, they know. And be like, all right, go over the boards, see if you can get some momentum.
Fire up the boys.
Yeah. And if they can, they can. And if they can't, whatever. But that's what they're there for, like, 4 minutes. But for me personally, the guys who scare the crap out of me and intimidate are the guys like Chris Neal, who can go out there, play a regular shift. You always have to be wary about where the hell are they are on the ice, because they're taking a regular shift. They can hit, they can back it up. Those guys would scare the crap out of me.
Oh, bang on. And that's why, like, this whole the fighters keep guys honest. Like, I don't buy that with the super heavyweights, because all they're doing is fighting with themselves anyways. So,
well, it's like Orr with Kessel. Or not Orr. Scott with Kessel. It's like, you're not going to fight that guy.
If a guy takes a run at somebody, if Coletta takes a run at Carlson, Coletta's not going to fight Cassian. He might have to fight Chris Neal, and he probably won't even do that, because he's the type of player, he's not going to back that up. So is Cassian a deterrent from that happening? No, he's just going to end up going out there and fighting John Scott. I understand the team wants that.
I think the Senators have enough toughness. Like, if we're going to expand upon this point, like, going back to the series against Montreal, I know Montreal is not considered a tough team by any measure, and they brought in Peros this offseason to help address that. But, like, last year in the playoffs, Ottawa, full line brawl, every single one of them won handedly. Handedly.
Yeah.
They took care of it themselves. Like, if David Jerzynski doesn't get in that fight, taking off Frazier McLaren last year, I don't even know if we have Matt Cassian on this team. I don't even know if he's needed, but there he is, taking 4 minutes a night. If he doesn't fight, is that because he was a deterrent, or is that just because he couldn't find a dance partner, or is it because the Senators were in a game and he didn't want to give the other team any momentum? Like, what's he there for? He's just there as a mechanism for the coach to say, oh shit, our guys don't have it tonight. Go fight someone, Matt. Go get your face filled in. See if you can inspire the troops. Like, to me, that's what he is. If I'm looking for team toughness, Chris Neal's the guy. Zach Smith, Jared Cowan, go down the list. You have tons of guys on the team who can handle themselves if the situation calls for it. But like in terms of actually enjoying fights, the fights I enjoy the most are ones like that Montreal line brawl where stuff escalates and it reaches a boiling point. And it's like, oh, crap, here we go. And that's when you get into it. Like seeing guys like Peros versus Orr fighting for the hell of it. It's crazy. And even...
It's getting scary.
The scariest part, and like I watched a fight the next night, the scariest part are these like MMA takedowns that are going on after the fight where it's like guys might be tied up. They can't get any more thrown punches in. And all of a sudden they're trying to throw their opponent over their shoulder onto the ice. That's where a lot of damage is getting done. These guys hitting the ice violently, slamming their heads. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like if you grab a guy and you throw him to the ice, you should get an extra 10 for like intent to injure and get thrown out. You deserve it. You deserve it at that point.
I think we're on the same page.
But that's just me. Anyways, no, what are your thoughts?
I honestly, same page. I like fighting. I like its role in the game, and I do like the Chris Neils and guys that get in the fights when it's just reached that point where that's what happens. But yeah, the stage fighting is a joke. It's a waste of a roster spot. I'm not for it.
But it's tough, right? There's a fine line because you're seeing at some stages, like there'll be a clean hit. Guys will fight. Just to kind of like, okay, I got hit. I'm on my ass. Don't want to get embarrassed. I'll go fight the guy to show him.
Or most of the time, it's someone else sticking up for a teammate.
Yeah, and it's like a whole reputation thing, right? Especially for the bottom six guys who are trying to like, you know, leave that mark, get their guys going, build up kind of that reputation as being a team guy, and they'll try and step up and get in on that. Yeah, you're seeing more of that these days too. There is a fine line in terms of what I find acceptable and enjoyable.
Speaking with taking runs, did you see the Stewart hit on Rick Nash?
No, I haven't seen it, but you were telling me beforehand when we were coming to the studios that Stewart was suspended for 3 games.
Just got announced as we walked in the studio, so I haven't seen the video or the explanation.
So for the people in the audience who haven't seen it like me, what happened?
Rick Nash receives a puck on the boards, like right above the hash marks, in between the hash marks and the blue line. And he's kind of got his back to the boards, and he's looking in the zone to the goal line, receiving the puck. And then he moves the puck like up out of the zone, like outlet pass. And as that happens, he looks towards the blue line, and Stewart comes in. And what I thought happened is he gets shoulder straight down the middle of the body into his head, maybe. But I don't have a problem with the hit.
So is it just a hit where a guy's vulnerable? What was he suspended for?
Said I didn't see the Shanahan stuff because it just happened as we got in here. But I believe he was probably suspended for either hit to head or I don't know if it was an elbow that they're considering it. But I saw two replays of it last night, and I didn't think the elbow caught him. I think that his shoulder for sure catches his head, but he hits him square in the chest. I find when he turns around. Maybe they're thinking he took a run because Nash was vulnerable because he wasn't looking at the play. I don't know. I'll have to wait till I see Shanny's video, but I didn't have too much of a problem with that hit.
I have nothing to add. I didn't see it.
Sorry, buddy.
No. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. You see lots of hits, though. And you'll see stuff get reviewed. But like hockey's a game where players skate hunched over. You see a lot of inadvertent contact with the head because of it. Because the first thing that usually gets hit will be some part of your head. So it's tough. Again, we talked about this with fighting. There's a fine line in some instances. Then it's tough to kind of remove that. If you start suspending everybody who gets hit to the head, it's kind of like the rabbit hole. Like, where does it end?
It's a fine line, and it's a fast physical game.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. What else you got?
Speaking of tough guys, why is Dan Carcillo seeing top 6 minutes? He's on a line with Jeff Carter and Mike Richards tonight.
You know what, though? He has a little bit of skill. And I think they tried to get some of it out in Philadelphia. Like, the guy can actually play, but he's too stupid to stay out of the box to be an effective team guy. You just can't trust the guy. And I think we did see this a lot in Philadelphia. I forget who it was. Maybe it was Giroux. It might have been Giroux in the playoffs versus Pittsburgh from that one series. I just remember seeing a visual of like one of the leaders on Philadelphia going into the penalty box after he got a minor and saying, dude, what the hell are you doing? Like, knock it off. Yeah, it's just like reprehending him in front of everybody.
Healthy scratched anywhere else he's gone since then. And
yeah, because he's been where? Like Chicago,
LA now.
He started in Phoenix.
Started in Phoenix, yeah. He went Phoenix to Philly. That might be it. But he was healthy scratched a lot, I believe, in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. He seems like a guy who's destined to play in Buffalo because that's where most of these guys end up going.
Rats. Like, to me, and like I'm not sitting here watching the Kings training camp, but why isn't Tyler Toffoli given a chance on that? I know he was a right-handed shot and he plays right wing, and that's what I guess what they have Jeff Carter playing right now. But I'm sure Carter could switch over to the left side and make room for Toffoli. Like, that, I'd want that guy in my lineup, especially after his playoff, more than Dan Carcillo in the top six.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's my take as an outsider.
Is that a case of too many one-way contracts, though? Possibly.
Could be. I don't know their roster.
It could be like a DaCosta, a Zibanejad thing. Nah. Like, who knows? Who knows? They'd rather just play it safe, hope not to lose like a one-way contract as opposed to just sending down the better player.
Could be. Maybe he didn't have a good camp and they want him to play better than Manchester. Who knows?
Okay, so I was in Montreal working the Habs-Flyers game on Saturday night, and it was the last game that Peter Laviolette would coach for the Flyers. And this is a team that went out, brought in Mark Streit, tried to address their defensive situation. I think Hal Gill's another guy that they brought in.
Vincent LeCavalier.
The corpse of Andres Mazaros is still on the Flyers, and oh my God, they're terrible on defense.
How bad is that Shen Van Riemsdyk trade looking, too?
Oh, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He looks so good in Toronto.
Van Riemsdyk, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's just, they're desperate. They want some young bloodline to help Braden Schenn emerge into the player that they thought he would be when they traded Mike Richards for him. You go back to those Jeff Carter and Mike Richards trades. I know, like, I was reading Puck Daddy, and Greg Wyshynski was going back to the Brzgalov move. And, what preceded it? There are two moves that he attributed to the downfall of the Flyers, but I think it even goes back further than that. And it's the whole trade of the Dry Island boys, of Jeff Carter and Mike Richards. They just did not get nearly enough back for those two players. Like, Braden Schenn hasn't done anything. And that guy was like the top prospect in hockey for a year or two. Like, what the hell happened in that guy's development curve? He's just hit the wall. Is that a case of being like a Stahl boy? Where it's like, you know how like Jordan Stahl, who's a good player, I'm not trying to knock him, is just the media hype and buildup around the bloodlines in Canada for some of these players is just incredible. Do you think that played a part?
Could be. I don't watch him closely enough to be able to, I guess, fully answer that. But
yeah,
they've definitely got host. And I think LA's done that a couple times now. They got rid of Colton Tubert for Dustin Penner, and he won a cup. And Tubert, I don't even think he's playing on the roster right now.
He's an afterthought in Edmonton.
Thomas Hickey found his way to Long Island. Like, they've had a lot of can't-miss prospects that missed, and mm-hmm. they've gotten rid of, and
they suck at other teams into taking them.
But
you know what? Sean Couturier as well. Great, great defensive aptitude. Saw him break up a number of plays in the neutral zone. Offensively, though, don't see it. And he's a high pick.
That's why he fell, I think, projected
to be like a two-way guy. And I know, like, the Q is renowned for being this high-scoring league. I just don't see it with him. I just don't see that offensive aptitude.
I guess that's what they're banking on when they got rid of their captain, Mike Richards, who will do anything to win a Stanley Cup. And I could see the Jeff Carter trade. They had a lot of centers coming. They had Briere, Richards, Giroux, Couturier.
Voracek turned out to be a decent player.
I like Voracek.
He's not a Jeff Carter in terms of production yet, although he had a great year last year, but I think he shot like 17.1%. Like, there's no way in hell that guy's doing that this year. Wayne Simmonds. Nice complimentary piece. Probably not someone you build a team around.
How much longer is Holmgren's leash? Like, I guess the chatter is now that he's going to eventually move his way into another front office gig.
Well, the thing is, though, that they have Ron Hextall waiting in the wings. He was brought over from L.A., which inadvertently fleets the Flyers on this Schenn trade for Mike Richards. I think it was just Schenn and Simmonds, was it not? Maybe there was a pick involved as well.
Might have been.
But, you know, yeah, you have two young building blocks who've won at every level that they played at, whether it was internationally. They just went to the Cup Finals, lost, and they just did not get nearly enough back for those guys. And that's the sad reality of it. Chris Pronger's injury, he was the other person who I was thinking of that Wyshynski referenced. And, like, losing him, that's a huge blow. And then they failed to bring in Shea Weber. It seems like they hedged their bets on a number of things. They fell through.
It's patchwork defense. Look at their goaltending. They have a guy in Mason who hasn't done anything since his Calder year.
Ray Emery, who played 18, 20 games last year, hasn't played a full season in, 2 years? How's that guy going to hold up? How's that guy going to do playing behind a team where he isn't sheltered?
And where he's probably going to be seeing more minutes. Like, I don't know how his health is, how his hip is, but he hasn't played a full season. Like, he split time with Crawford last year on a great team.
Anyways, I think that's it. We'll try and get Simpson on at another point in time.
I had a lot of good rapid-fire questions for Simmer this time.
Yeah.
We'll have to do it again.
Save it.
We'll save it.
Save it. I think we're going to try and be back in here next week. So.
Absolutely.
We can try and bring him in.
Try and bring him in. Maybe Bobby Ryan will be goalless through another number of games.
Oh, could you imagine? Don't panic. 5 games pass. All right, panic. He hasn't scored yet. Oh, could you imagine if he's still goalless by, next week? Spets is still out with a groin injury. Yikes. It's not an easy road trip, even if those guys are, playing well, healthy. Not an easy road trip to get points in.
Oh, for sure. Especially the way San Jose's rolling. They're destroying everyone.
Mm-hmm.
L.A. just shuts down. They were 1-2 this year, and they...
Jakob Silfverberg posts, 8 goals against Ottawa. Yep, tons of things to look forward to.
We'll see what Steph DeCosta can do tonight. I'm excited for tonight's game, though. Aside from that, get the Doughty Carlson matchup. Craig Anderson, this will motivate him, another battle against an American starting goaltender.
Touche.
Maybe we'll put up another shutout.
Touche. All right, man. I think that's enough for tonight. I think we've talked about everything that needs to be. I think we've exhausted all our information. Listeners, thanks for checking us out. Creech, thanks for coming on.
Let's go watch games.
Simmer, we will try and get you back on at another point. And yeah, that's a wrap. Let's go. Every morning when I wake up, money on my mind, go time to get kicked up. Sunshine coming through my blinds, I'm living, but really though, it's never enough. $10 billion.